5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Culture Map presents What's Eric Eating? From the Gal Media Studios in Houston, Texas, here's Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler. I have Ben McPherson from Bo Pasta coming up in a little bit. But first, I'm joined by my co-host this week. She's the chef owner of Fluff Bake Bar. Rebecca Mastin, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. Living the dream.
So let us dive right into the news of the week. Starting with you.
Me? What?
You have big news.
I do have big news. I've been keeping this secret since like May or June.
Tell the people.
Fluff Bake Bar is moving to the Heights.
Okay, so yes, but the Heights people are going to get fussy. It is technically you are moving to Shady Acres.
Oh, I like the name of that place. I throw a little shade every once in a while.
You've been known to throw a little shade. All right, so let's get the who, what, where, when.
Okay.
When? What is your last day in Midtown, and when do you expect the new location to open?
So our last day is this Sunday, January 19th. We'll be open our regular hours, 12 to 9. Might run out of something. I don't know.
You might. Yeah. go early for that last Veruca Salt.
We have to wait. So we plan next week we're going to start the move. You know, there's some things that take a couple days to get in and out of the buildings. Set it up. Make sure everything's in place. Start getting our final inspections and apply for the certificate of occupancy. So, you know, that all depends on the city.
So fingers crossed February 1st, is that safe to say?
That would be like crazy, wild, awesome, yes.
But definitely in time for Valentine's Day. That's a big,
yeah,
it's a big time for
you. If I have to bribe a city official to get open for Valentine's Day, I will.
All right. So I know we told people that you're moving to a neighborhood. Where exactly are you moving?
We are moving to 1701 West 15th Street. It's on 15th, just a couple blocks in off of Durham.
All right. And then how did you pick that location?
Well, you had a little hand in this. So
I am deeply amused at my own role in this.
Yes. I know. It's kind of awesome. So you let me know Jalazi on White Oak closed, and you gave me Mr. Camello's information. And so I called him up. And this is kind of something I've been thinking about for a while. My lease in Midtown is actually up at the end of February. So it was the time to start doing something. And Mr. Camello told me that he had sold the building, and I was like, well, crap. And he goes, but wait. And I go, what's that? He goes, I have another space. And so, he had two actually, and we looked at both, and despite the condition of the building on 15th Street, I fell in love with it.
Yeah. I haven't been inside yet. I drove past it.
Yeah.
And it looks kind of
chunky.
Yeah, ramshackle was the word that I was going to use.
There you go. Yeah.
But what about it caused you to fall in love with it?
I liked that it was in the middle of a neighborhood. I've always wanted to make Fluff a part of the community, supporting those around us, supporting local charities, things like that. And like literally we have houses around us. There's nothing else. But these
Yeah, townhouses, all kinds of stuff. Yeah, all right.
So that really appealed to me. The being a standalone building, we're paving the parking lot. I'll have my own parking. There are no meters. There's no meter made. There's no tow trucks, unless, of course, you leave it there for like 3 days, and then I'm going to have to tow you. That whole thing really appealed to me. And the reason I thought about this, I always remember Justin Yu telling me, I drive by Fluff Bake Bar 4 or 5 times a week, and I never stop because there's never a parking spot out front. And I'm like, well.
You're like, I have a giant fucking parking garage.
Exactly.
With a million spots. Like, what? Why can't you?
Why can't you go back there? But it's a pain in the ass to get to.
Yeah.
It is. You have to enter off Baldwin or Bagby, and then you have to, you know, text to park. And even though you get 90 minutes free, you still have to do it. And sometimes the parking,
it's a hassle.
Yeah, it's a pain in the ass.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So there is one cool thing about being in the middle of this neighborhood beyond that, which is that you're going to start serving breakfast.
Yes. So we decided that we are going to open at 7 a.m. And we never did it in Midtown because, A, there's 2 coffee shops down the street from us, and, B, the people that live above us just get in their car and drive to Starbucks anyways. So we never opened in the morning. And so now we're going to. Yeah.
And that means let me be explicit about what this means for the people. You're going to make croissants every day.
I am. I'm so excited.
You make the best croissants in Houston.
I don't know about that. Those ones at Magnolia are pretty damn good.
Okay, the ones at Magnolia are pretty damn good. And we disagree about the merits of a common bond croissant, but
in the beginning, I very much enjoyed that croissant.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But your croissants are excellent, and they only show up occasionally, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes for the Saturday morning bake sale, you'll bake off a batch. So what do you think? You're going to make like a couple dozen a day?
Yeah, we'll play it by ear. We'll see what happens. And there's, you know, when you don't sell a croissant, you make an almond croissant out of it. So that'll be available the next day.
And pain au chocolat, maybe? A couple of maybe?
We're going to see. I'm definitely going to do croissants. We're going to do a kolache. We're going to collaborate with Leonard over at Truth.
Yeah, let me just say that again for people. Kolaches with Truth barbecue in them, whether it's brisket or pulled pork or sausage, you haven't really figured that out yet.
No, but we haven't figured it out. We got to figure out what's easiest for both of us.
Yeah.
And I don't want to put a strain on him.
But that's awesome. People are going to love that.
Yeah, that'll be it. So we'll have that meaty option. We've got lemon pound cake. We have financier. We'll probably do either a coffee cake or a cinnamon roll, just depending on the demands of the people.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of your cinnamon rolls, so that's my vote.
I know. But the birthday cake cinnamon roll is pretty darn good.
Yeah, it doesn't suck.
It's happy.
Yeah.
That's a good way to start your morning.
All right. So any other details to share before we move on to topic number 2?
We'll still have Kat's coffee. My future ex-husband makes a good cup of coffee. But we'll expand, like we'll have drip coffee and stuff instead of just espresso-based. We'll still make cakes. We'll still make couch potatoes.
Right. Yeah, we should be explicit about that too. All the stuff that people love about Fluff, you will still make. Couch potato cookies,
Veruca
star-crossed lovers, Veruca salt, unicorn bait.
Yeah. All those are staying. They're not going. Well, they're coming with us.
Right.
They're not staying in Midtown.
No, that space will be vacated. Someone else will take it. We wish them much success. But this is big news. This is very exciting for you.
It is. It's huge. I'm. You know, I started in the Heights 4 or 5 years ago. Well, 9 years ago.
Yeah, at Revival Market.
At Revival Market, and we had 4 years worth of customers who don't particularly care to cross I-10.
Right. And you live in Oak Forest, so this
I know.
Mean, this is convenient for you.
I'm coming back, y'all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We good?
Yeah, we good.
All right.
Thank you.
My pleasure. All right. Topic number 2, Aaron Bluedorn.
So excited for this.
The former executive chef of Cafe Baloo has revealed that he has leased the former Pass and Provision space on Taft Street for a new restaurant. All right, you said you're so excited for this. Why are you so excited? Because I'm excited about this too, but I'm going to let you go first.
So I literally met Aaron when he came to Houston. I connected through a colleague at Danielle because I worked at Danielle. But the reputation, I mean, if It's very rare that an American gets to be like the chef de cuisine at a blued restaurant, right? Like, you've got to prove yourself. And
right. I mean, we can be explicit about this. Daniel Ballou is the best French chef in America, maybe? Eric Repaire might want to.
Eric Repaire, Hubert Keller.
Ludo Lefebvre, Hubert Keller. Yeah, I mean, there's some guys that are in that conversation, but
yeah.
Daniel's on that list.
He's definitely on that list. Papa. We like to call him Papa.
People who work for him have gone on to great success. Like, there's a guy, you know, Aaron's predecessor was Gavin Kaysen.
Yep.
Who moved to Minneapolis and opened Spoon and Stable.
Andrew.
Won a Food and Wine Best New Chef, won a James Beard Award.
Yep. Andrew Carmelini.
Right.
He was at Café Ballou when I was at Danielle. Alex Lee. The Dominique Ansel. The list goes on. I mean,
right. Unbelievably talented people work for him, and when they leave him, they go on and do like really spectacular things. So
yeah.
Sky's the limit for Aaron Bluedorn's unnamed restaurant.
And plus, I mean, he's married to a Pappas.
Yes.
You've got
Victoria Pappas Bluedorn.
Yes. So you have, I mean, I think it was only a natural move for him to want to open a restaurant in Houston because of family ties. And you've already got a whole clientele base excited for you to come in to Houston as well.
Yeah. Calling her Houston restaurant royalty would not be inappropriate.
There you go. I didn't know the appropriate term. I like that. I want to be royalty.
So, well, you got to get another generation or two. You got to have.
That's not going to happen.
So, yes, it's exciting that there's a space, and it's exciting that there's a timeline, which is to say we expect this to open sometime towards the end of the summer.
Yeah.
Don't have a name, don't have a concept, don't have a menu. It'll have French touches, but it won't be explicitly a French restaurant, which I think is smart.
Exactly, yeah.
Because I don't really think of us as a French dining town.
No. I mean, maybe if you tie in Cajun French, is that a thing? I feel like Drake does that a little bit.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think. Look, I mean, Drake Leonard's at Eunice is from Louisiana, and he's working for a New Orleans-based restaurant group. So that they're a little bit Creole with some French touches and a banging French wine list makes a ton of sense.
Right.
I don't expect Aaron, who's from Seattle and worked in New York, to do Creole. That would not feel authentic to me. But... yeah, clearly we will see.
I can't think of a better person to take over that space. I think that it'll be. I think that's an appropriate space for him.
Yeah, and I think he will draw a crowd. I think.
And it's nice to know that Jade Range is getting another round. Man, that thing's had some life. It's been there, the big center cooking suite.
Okay.
In the kitchen, it's been there since Gravitas.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, continuing that building's legacy as a home for ambitious dining.
Yes, I love that. Yay, Aaron.
Topic number three, Lonnie Schiller, who I suppose I should note is one of the people who founded Culture Map. He is also one of the founders of Cafe Annie, The Grove, Cafe Express, Rio Ranch. He's a Houston restaurant mover and shaker, as it were. Has a new project. He's partnered with his son-in-law to open a new bar. I'm calling this the Heights. It's north of I-10 and east of Shepherd, so that's the Heights to me.
Yeah, it's like if you were to go...
It's on Patterson Street.
Which is like you get to off of Taylor, right?
Well, you can get to it from I-10. I mean, it's right there.
Oh, that's right.
It's on the White Oak.
There's an exit for Shepherd Patterson. You're right. Okay. So, I know exactly where we're going.
A massive new patio bar called Patterson Park that will open this summer. It is currently under construction. I mean, I don't know that there's a whole ton to say about this, to be honest with you, except to say that, you know, they are clearly working on the Kirby Ice House model.
Right.
Hugely financially successful. They bought the land. Which gives it some bonus. Longevity. They bought, it's like 1.25 acres, which is not a messed around parcel. And it'll do all the things that you expect a patio bar to do. It'll have cocktails, it'll have beer, it'll have wine, it'll have games. It'll be dog friendly. They'll have a second story patio with a view of the downtown skyline.
You're good.
It's all good. This is
all
like
all the checks. All the list has been checked.
Right. This is catnip for. I mean, you know, we see it at Kirby Ice House. We see it at Axelrad. We see it at Truck Yard. You know this this style of bar. Well, or in your new neighborhood, Heights Beer Garden, right? Obviously,
that's
very
true,
successful.
Yeah.
You know, this style of bar with a big outdoor space and kind of a gathering spot for people has been just hugely. It is our bar style of the moment, and they're not going away. And it seems like every neighborhood inside the Loop is going to get one or two of them eventually.
I think it's appropriate. I think it's good. I mean. I would love to go to Axelrad more, but it's so far away. And you know me, I don't like to drive.
I don't think of you as a big drinker, to be honest with you. A big bar goer.
I'm not. I like to pretend that I am, but I'm not.
You were young and fun once.
I was. Now I'm old.
All right. And then I just want to briefly mention Sydney Degas, formerly of Café Azor, currently of Mona Italian Kitchen, is opening a new restaurant called Pharaoh in the Understory Food Hall downtown. So,
cool.
So right now, so I know you're looking at me and I didn't prep you for this. So this is on me. Mona Italian Kitchen is a build your own pasta bowl concept and it's been pretty successful for him, but Pharaoh. So, but not everybody likes to eat carbs.
That's true.
Right.
Yeah. So especially right now.
Right. So Pharaoh will be a bowl, like a build your own bowl concept, but you can get quinoa and ancient grains instead of pasta with, you know, chicken or seafood or plant-based protein and all kinds of roasted vegetables and stuff.
Seems like a trend.
Yeah, he is definitely like swimming in the flower child kind of vibrant, you know, pool.
Yeah.
And fast casual, grab and go, perfect in the, like, because Understory is as much food court as food hall.
Okay.
Like, it's basically an amenity for lunchtime downtown office workers. But so the idea that you can get this, you know, grab and go, you know, it's between 10 and 15 bucks. It's healthy. It won't leave you feeling sluggish in the afternoon. Like, all of those things are appealing to people.
Yes, if you're a downtown worker in a power suit.
Yeah. I was having dinner last week in downtown, and this whole group of people wearing suits like walked out. They'd been having like a late business dinner. I am so glad I don't have to wear a suit to work.
Oh my God, I was just telling somebody on my staff that the other day. I saw a woman in her little power suit, and I'm like, yeah, I'm so glad I don't have to put that on every day.
Yeah.
That's just not me.
No, me neither. All right, Becky, that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurant of the week. Stick around.
You're listening to What's Eric Eating?
So, Becky, for our restaurant of the week, I want to talk to you about Buffalo Bayou Brewing Company.
Yes.
We've talked about this on the show a little bit. I had Rasul Zarinfar, one of the founders, and Chef Arash Karat on the show a few weeks ago to talk about their end of things, but we haven't really talked about eating there. So let me kick this to you. You have a longstanding history with Buffalo Bayou Brewing Company.
I do, yes.
You've collaborated with them in the past.
The Red Velvet Stout.
Yes.
That is based off our Black Velvet Cake, which is red velvet cake, cherry jam, dark chocolate crunchy pearls, and cream cheese icing. So they incorporated the chocolate and the cherry into the stout. So it's a red velvet stout. My uncle loves it. It's good. I'm not a stout drinker, but how exciting.
Right. But so I just want people to know that you know them and you like them and they like you.
Yes, I do. I adore them.
All right.
I've been frequenting the brewery since it was just the first little place on Nolda.
So we went to their new 200-seat restaurant at their new brewery in Sawyer Yards.
Is that 200 seats?
With the patio and everything, yeah.
Oh,
it's pretty big.
It's huge.
It's substantial.
It doesn't feel big, though.
No, because it's kind of divided up into, like, there's, like, the bar area, and then there's, like, the dining room, and then there's the patio. So it feels, you know, it's kind of industrial, obviously, as you would expect in a brewery and with a view of the brewing operations through big glass windows. But
I know it's fun. It's fun to look at the 5-story high cans.
Yeah.
So many cans.
Yeah. Yeah. Barrel. They measure liquid in barrels at the brewery.
Oh, in barrels. No, I'm talking about there literally were like stacks of
yes,
beer cans.
Pallets and pallets of beer cans.
Pallets
yes,
and pallets right. of beer cans. I was like, man, I wonder who the guy is that's going to knock that over.
I was thinking about the fermenters and the bright tanks.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Those things are barrels.
They measure
huge.
Those in barrels. Yeah. All right. So you had a chicken sandwich. I had tacos. We split a pizza and the pakora, which is like a crispy Indian-style fried veggie appetizer.
It was delicious.
Yeah.
Except for I was afraid of the jalapenos.
Well, but yeah, it's got all these like sliced pickled vegetables, and it is super delicious.
Is it in chickpea flour?
It is.
Yeah, and then it has a nice little dipping sauce.
Yeah, a little salsa verde.
Yeah, delicious.
How was your chicken sandwich?
Delicious. I very much enjoyed it.
Crispy, juicy, all good things?
All the things it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
With a nice sauce. Good fries. You know I love a good fry.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
They make their fries.
That's good. Yeah. Pizza dough. Tasty. That it's 72-hour fermentation.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice chew. Light and airy.
Yeah. Thin. Like almost, what is that, Neapolitan?
Yeah. Not quite. Yeah.
Not quite. But
crispier
almost.
Than Neapolitan.
Yeah. But, which I like better.
Right.
Yeah. I like a little chew to mine.
Yeah. And Arash put like artichokes and something else on it for us, which was not
on the menu.
Not strictly speaking, but yeah. You know, you can tweak it.
I think he made it more for himself, just to be honest with you.
I think he wanted an excuse to
sit down
take a
and
break.
Chat.
Yeah. I will say the only thing that kind of bummed me out was I did not like my tacos as much as I expected to.
And Arash has such a good reputation for
well,
tacos.
Well, he made excellent tacos at Beaver's and four different Houston Barbecue Festival events over the years.
Yeah.
Tortillas just were like not maybe as fresh tasting as they could have been. And this seems like a stupid thing to complain about, but there was so much meat in the tacos that it was hard to eat them without like dripping everything all over the place.
Right.
So I will say, I think the pizza is, and I've been a couple of times now, the pizza is the big winner for me. I probably wouldn't get tacos again. I had intended to order a burger.
But then you saw the tacos.
But then I saw the tacos, and I was like, oh, I want to try it, you know.
Yeah.
Tacos so good. Tacos not so good. Not doing the tacos again.
Oh, I actually went back with the Wilsons, and I had the falafel wrap.
Oh.
And you know, I have sort of a love-hate relationship with falafel still.
This was your, for people who don't know, falafel was your undoing in Top Chef Just Desserts.
Yeah, that damn falafel. It was tasty. It was good. I enjoyed it. And I haven't, to be honest with you, the only other falafel I've eaten since Top Chef was at La Os du Falafel in Paris. So
yeah, which is arguably some of the best falafel in the world.
It is so good. I eat it like 2 or 3 times in a span of a week in Paris. But yeah, it was tasty. It was good. It's in a wrap. It's got some hummus and...
Well, and I think it's interesting that the dishes that we liked the best were an artichoke pizza, fried pickled vegetables, and a falafel wrap, which just kind of goes to the point that this is not like they have wings and they have burgers at Buffalo Bayou, but you can eat you don't have to like eat dude food.
No, like, but I do want to try those fries, the loaded fries.
Yeah, with the chili on top.
Yeah, beer cheese.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love beer cheese?
No one that I want to be friends with.
Right? Yeah, there's a lot of things. It's a pretty big menu. It's kind of hard to, like, decide what you want to eat. I just naturally, the first time, was drawn to something that I know I like. And that way, I'm not sad if it's not good because I ordered the wrong thing.
Right. But it's not, well, I was going to say you'll go back, but you have already gone back.
Yeah, I've already gone back. I like the vibe. It was too cold again to sit up on the patio up on the third floor. So that'll be, I think, but the view is.
Yeah, they have a really
spectacular
view.
Yeah.
All right. So who was the last Saturday morning bake sale before you relocate?
I'm waiting to find out.
Oh, all right. Well, stay tuned to the Fluff Bake Bar Instagram for those details.
It's someone local and it's someone good.
Okay.
I just need him to confirm.
Okay.
Come on, chef.
Rebecca, thanks for being here.
Thank you. I had a great time.
All right. I will be right back with Ben McPherson.
Yay.
You're listening to What's Eric Eating?
I'm joined this week by Ben McPherson, the chef owner of Bo Pasta in Bravery Chef Hall. Ben, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, Eric. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. Thanks for being here.
Oh, man. I appreciate being here.
I feel like I've known you for a long time.
Yeah, 7 years.
Yeah, because you came to Houston to open Batanga.
Yes.
The Tapas Bar from Atlanta. But I do always kind of like to start these things at the beginning. So how did you become interested in professional cooking?
I kind of got forced into it by just life happened that way. I fell in love with just being, I was a dishwasher, got promoted to a cook, and I absolutely despised high school. So I begged my parents so I could get my GED, and they let me, but I had to have a full-time job, and I had to apply. There was like a local culinary school.
Okay.
And so that's what I did. So I just did that. I got my GED and went into like a community college.
You grew up, in Alabama, right?
Yeah, Fairhope, Alabama.
Okay. Right.
And, then I transferred to Johnson & Wales in Charleston.
Oh, so you were in Charleston, like, when all the...
I was in Charleston from 98 and 99.
Okay. So that's kind of before it becomes, like, the culinary
capital. It was big then.
Okay.
Yeah, it was, like, Donald Barrettman, and there's quite a few really big guys there then. But I went to... Sean Brock and I were in the same class.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've known Sean since 98.
Did you know he was going to become one of the most famous chefs in America?
I had no idea. Really, no idea. Like, yeah. He was just kind of like hillbilly kind of kid. He didn't really know then.
All right, so you graduated from Johnson & Wales. Where'd you go after that?
I went to Atlanta. Okay. And then I lived in Atlanta from 99 until 2012 and pretty much did cooked Italian food the whole time there. For about 6 years. And then I fell in love with tapas, and so I ended up going over to work at a couple Spanish restaurants there.
Okay, so it was working in the Spanish restaurant. That's when you met Hank Fastoff, the owners of Batanga.
Yeah, yeah. So Brian gave me my first executive chef position when I was 28 years old at a place called Loca Luna, and he also had another one called Eclipse de Luna. And then I had actually left them to move to Florida. And because I was like, oh, I get close to home. So I went to Pensacola Beach. Didn't really work out as the oil spill. It's kind of a hard time to live down there. And so I came back and landed, which might have been my big break, was Barcelona Wine Bar. And when I was at Barcelona Wine Bar, we got really good accolades, gorgeous kitchen. We were just packed all the time. And it was a huge company, and they were growing really fast. It's a Connecticut-based company. That lasted, and then it ended up not working out. And at the same time, Brian had moved to Houston, and he was like, "Hey, do you want to kind of help me out?" And he's like, "It's kind of we want to combine these two ideas, which is Barcelona Wine Bar and Loca Luna." He's like, "Can you shoot me a menu, so I can start hiring a chef, and you can come hit, consult, and he goes, I'll take care of you." So. I came here and actually never turned back.
Right. It was like, oh, yeah, you'll come here for like 6 months. You'll train the guy. You'll get everything situated.
And
then you can go home.
I stayed. And I fell in love with the city. Because I don't know if I must have been looking for something and didn't know it. I had met some really great friends. And I just never really looked back. I remember I actually went back in like May, and I still had like my Christmas tree up in my apartment and been paying for like months of rent of this apartment in Atlanta that I didn't even, just threw everything in a box and, drove it all back
to Houston.
Here. Yeah.
All right. So how long were you at Batanga? Like 3 or 4 years, I think.
No, I actually only stayed a year.
Oh, okay.
So it's funny because I got into it and I was like, wait, I'm literally doing something I'd wanted to grow a little bit more as a chef, and I kind of gotten tired. I felt like I was in a box. And so I left because I was trying to – we started that pop-up series with Womack.
Oh, that's right. You were going to do a steakhouse.
Yeah, yeah. It was kind of like a Gulf Coast, like, the wood grill, like everything kind of like a tinge of smoke, which is very done now.
Yeah, but you were going to be Killen's STQ before there was Killen's
yeah,
STQ.
Yeah, and I actually looked at the exact same space.
Oh, wow.
So that was weird. I was like, okay, that happened. But it was great. It was a learning one. But then while we were doing the pop-up series, we got approached by On My and Lee and Pham to go over and open up the Prohibition. That was a lot of fun. That was one of the highlights of anything I've ever done in my career. It was lots of good and it was bad too.
Yeah, it's a funny sort of thing now because they've kind of moved away from food being like a focus of what they do at Prohibition. But I mean, I remember when you started there, you had this kind of super ambitious Southern menu. I mean, I remember that smoked fried chicken just being like totally banging. And then you were doing, like, for the people at the shows, you were doing these kind of decadent.
Yeah. We were trying to go over the top, like, three-course menus that didn't feel like it was, like, cruise ship food. But
right.
That's really hard, by the way. Like that's where we struggled the most was with those shows and constantly trying to keep good food out.
I mean, lobster thermidor, right? Like, you were screwing around
tried.
With some, like,
yeah, we
cool
really
stuff.
Tried. Yeah, okay. Oh man, that was.
But no, I mean you got some love for that. It was you were doing some cool stuff. And
yeah.
It kind of took you back to the.
Yep.
Charleston.
That's why I like kind of getting back into that like low country or southern food that I grew up eating. That I actually had strayed away from much of my career, but it was there. It's kind of like in my blood because it's you grow up around it and your grandparents are cooking it. It was funny because the whole deal with Prohibition was we had a conservatory, which I love the idea that we're going to do this food hall, and then we also were going to get the space on the corner, which is now Moonshiners, and that's actually what Bo is. So that was kind of, but it didn't happen.
Right, right. So okay,
but that's how everything's kind of come back circle. Because we got conservatory open, and then I left, and because of the Italian thing didn't work out, I was like, well, you know what? I really want to get into ownership. This is where I want to go in my career, and then I did the crisp.
You did the chicken sandwich thing that didn't work out.
Yeah,
we don't need to dwell on that, right?
I'm not gonna talk about it.
All right, fair enough. But so it sounds like. You had been wanting to do an Italian restaurant for a while.
This is my entire life. Like, okay. This is literally, like ever since I got into cooking, I've had it's kind of similar to what I'm doing now. Now, you know, obviously it evolves with kind of what's going on in times with food and how we eat. But I've always wanted to have, like, very fresh, like, very, like, high quality, super simple. It's kind of no frills because it's just literally it's the most – simple, like grandmother kind of food that you would get literally if you're like when you're in Italy with whatever ingredients we can possibly find,
right? But you're not Italian, right. I mean, you didn't grow up with this stuff.
Oh, no,
all right,
yeah. I guess you probably want to know why,
yeah. How did you fall in love with Italian food?
So, I was 14 and we lived in Heidelberg, Germany. My dad was like civilian military. And we would go like just randomly go to places, like jump in the car and drive. And anyway, we go to like France, we go to Switzerland. And one time we went down to Italy and we were in Tuscany. And I didn't really like eating much as a kid. I was like a little, all I wanted to just, I had energy, I just wanted to be outside running around. And anyway, I'll just never forget there was this plate of pasta and it was like a penne with some just like melted tomatoes and some Parmesan Reggiano and like some basil. That's it. And
three,
olive
oil. Like no and bullshit, it, three ingredients.
Yeah,
Italian
but
cooking.
I will never forget. I could not stop eating, and I'd never been like that ever in my life. So that's in my memory. But then fast forward to 99 and 98 when I was in culinary school, my dad lived in Naples, and so I would go over there and frequent and I got really started to get more into it. And for some reason, that actually spoke to me more than going out and doing shrimp and grits and doing Southern food. It just felt like lighter and cleaner than like a lot of like the greasier kind of Southern food, which is, I think that's a stereotype.
Yeah, I'm right. I mean, there's a lot of really beautiful vegetable oriented, mm-hmm. Southern food. It doesn't all have to be, no, you know, biscuits and...
But I think at the time, that's kind of what was stuck in my head.
Oh, 100%.
But now, now as chefs are doing absolutely amazing things with Southern food. It's just, yeah, I love it.
Right. But all right. But so, all right. So you fall in love with Italian food. You have an idea for an Italian restaurant. Crisp doesn't work out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever. How did you wind up, like, reuniting with Adam and Leanne to get on Bravery Chef?
So we actually had this deal already working back when we opened Crisp. So I was actually already kind of going that direction. They had approached me, and they're like, hey, we have this idea. We can get these chefs together, and we're going to create a chef hall. And I was like, okay. I don't know. Of course, I just jumped on it because it's what I wanted to do, and it's what we'd already been talking about. Just in a different format,
yeah.
You know, so as opposed to a full service restaurant, now it's going to be in a food hall, which I really like because that freed me up on some of the other things so I could learn to actually like own and run the business. Different from being the chef where all you do is literally just focusing 100% on just the food, or if I own a place with a bar and I'm running the, you know, like I would be overwhelmed and
right. You don't right. By signing on to Bravery, you don't have to worry about servers or a beverage program.
I don't have to worry about any of that.
Or paying the electric bill.
No, I don't have to worry
none of that stuff. Yeah.
So that's why it's such a great unique opportunity. For right now, I mean I'm not gonna say I still want to keep growing. So I'm looking at other options to kind of do some new stuff.
Oh no, we're getting to that. Like
yeah.
Don't think you're getting out of here without talking about that. But let's focus in a little bit on what you are doing at Bo. I mean, you've got fresh made pasta, you've got kind of Roman style pizza alla taglia. Is that
pizza alla taglia?
So how did you kind of develop that menu or decide that that's what you wanted to do?
So I spent a lot of time on the dishes. From experience, I learned that you have to have signature items. You have to have like staple items that people just want to come back to eat every single time they come back, and that's how we build our regular base, and that's huge in the business. Now, you can be the hottest, coolest restaurant, but if you don't have people that are coming back once a week, sometimes twice a week to eat with you, you're not gonna. I've never seen anybody be successful without that. And so I found dishes, which is like the spaghetti with the tomato sauce, and I found dishes like that, and of course the pappardelle and bolognese that you just want to eat it all the time. And but it took me a while. I mean, traveling, kind of eating at other restaurants. That's kind of how that came. The pizza was actually going to be Neapolitan. I'm very opinionated about Neapolitan pizza.
Everyone who cares about Neapolitan pizza is very opinionated.
And so I like really got into it, and I was like, I think I'd become my own worst enemy if I did a Neapolitan because I would never be happy with anything I ever did.
Also, could you have done a wood burning?
We probably could have because they put one in cherry block, but because it's a little bit different because it's more of a chimney as opposed to having to have the hood. And was like, you need to try this Roman style pizza, and so I figured out a way to get over to Italy to go to Rome and try it. And I actually have a really good story about that because we were in Rome and I had the girlfriend with me. And that morning her and I were not getting along. We were kind of like arguing pretty bad and we were hangry is what it was. We probably stayed out too late drinking wine the night before. And we make it over to Pizzeria, which is Gabriel Banchi. He's like, the guy's a freaking god.
He's
god.
The master of Roman style.
Yeah,
pizza.
He's like the... Well, he's like the bread god.
He's
like he just the way what he can do with flour in water is just insane. Anyway, we get there and we're just like we need coffee, we need pizza, we need food in us. And and there's a line, it just takes forever, and we're just like we're just not even talking at this point. And so finally we get up there, we get our pizza, and I went and grabbed some coffees for us and just like, got a little stand-up table. And I come over, and she'd already had the food, and she had taken a couple bites, and she was crying. And I just felt like the biggest asshole at this point. I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, I didn't, like, I don't know why. I'm sorry, whatever I said. She's like, no. She's like, no. She's like pointing at the pizza. And I eat it, and I was like, it was a fucking epiphany. It was just one of those things where it's like, this might be the best bite of food I've ever had in my life.
All right. And, what made it so good?
It's crunchy, but when you go to chew on it, it's like eating air. Like, it literally would just like melt. Like, the dough would just melt. And that's what I'm trying to duplicate with Bo, with our pizza. I do a little bit different pizza than his. I do a lot higher hydration. So he does like 60, I think getting nerdy on this. So he does like 67 to like 72%.
Okay.
I'm upwards of like 81 to 83%. I think that he's doing naturally leavened.
Is that like a climate thing for Houston or?
I don't know. I don't know. No, it's more about the fermentation process on how it's going to ferment. He's doing naturally leavened breads where I'm not. I'm doing yeast leavened breads.
Okay.
That's probably the difference between us. I don't know. I need to go try the one in Chicago.
I think it's coming in New Orleans.
Yeah. And they actually, I got an email that said they were coming here.
Ooh.
So, yeah, I need to open a bunch of these.
Yeah, I'm not trying to put you out of business, Ben McPherson, but I will not say no to a Bonsi in Houston.
Yeah, but he does. He also, his thing is also they go crazy on the toppings.
Yeah, yours are pretty restrained for the most part.
This is the learning curve, is that I'm learning about what the guests want. We sell probably 7 slices of pepperoni to any of the more like weird creative pizzas.
Well, of course.
So that's why I'm like, well, you know, pepperoni keeps me in business.
is like the t-shirt the bartenders wear, vodka pays the bills.
And this is my plan with Bo, is that, so I did open with like a really basic, like it's like, here's the like traditional tortelli that you'll get in Bologna. Like, here is traditional pappardelle Bologna. It's like, here is like very traditional dishes, very simple. Because my idea is that I'm going to get the staff in and like, how do I develop them? I can't start them out with these like crazy like ingredient combinations, because then they'll never really understand what the premise is and the basics.
Right. You have to walk before you can
That's
run.
That's what we're doing. So, but like, we just finally did like, well, we've done a couple really cool, crazy pizzas, like the potato and mortadella and rosemary. But the one we just put on this weekend, and I'm going to keep it on for a little while, is the pepperoni. Pineapple pizza.
I'm just messing with people.
Let's just mess with them. So it's fun though, because we did pineapple and kimchi with speck ham.
Ooh.
And it really works, man.
So it's sweet and spicy.
Yeah, and smoky.
Oh yeah. Okay.
So it's and sour. So yeah, so we've got like this like
right.
flavor bomb.
Well, and what was that? You gave me a filled pasta the last time I was over there.
Yeah.
They weren't ravioli and they weren't.
Was it agnoletti?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Was it the crab and burrata?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was
And now you're doing lobster ravioli.
Yeah,
right?
I had a lobster crawfish on. It flew so fast that I was like, oh, I can't keep up with that. We sold 50 orders in 2 days.
Okay.
And the thing about pasta is it's extremely labor intensive. And like, yes, I can get a machine that extrudes it, but like the handmade stuff, it like
right, to fill it, them it just individually takes us,
and we
a lot
just had that little space. So I can only have one stuffed pasta on the menu at a time.
Right. And I like that you're getting a little more ambitious. I saw you were running Osso Buco recently.
Yeah. I'm starting to get more like higher price items to kind of test the market there. So we got the saffron risotto and just like very traditionally braised Osso Buco on top of it, and it was fun because like we take the marrow out of and fold that into the risotto, and you know, as opposed to just putting the whole thing.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, right. I can give you a plate of Osso Buco and risotto for $24 as opposed to having to charge $45.
Yeah, I love Osso Buco is one of my all time favorite things to eat.
Yeah,
but you know, every time I see it on a menu for like $50, I get sad a little bit.
Yeah.
That's a big commitment.
It really is one of the best foods to eat. Like,
all right, so overall, exceeding your like meeting your expectations, exceeding your expectations. How do you feel about?
I'm very happy. I'm never really a happy person, by the way, which sucks. I just try to find something. How do we get up, make ourselves better every day, which drives the staff absolutely crazy. And but I'm finding happiness. This one I'm very content. Okay. That's where I am right now.
So, all right. So you have one location in Bravery Chef Hall. What are you like? What's the goal? Food halls, standalone restaurant?
Yeah,
I've got
another one. Yes, there will be another one. You know, there's a conservatory going downstairs.
I do know that. I was explicitly. I mean, all of my coworkers here would love for there to be pizza on the first floor.
Yeah. So maybe.
Maybe. Okay.
And then so I'm also developing the pizza for retail. Because we discovered it holds, and it heats really well at home.
And right now we're
R&Ding it. So I'm literally making pizzas, and I have them like dated. And so we're like, this is what it's like frozen after a week. This is what it's like frozen after 3 weeks. Which is kind of, it's actually really fun because I'm like watching how the quality goes up and down with a freezer. And so we're looking at probably going, you know, we'll approach some of the grocery stores. And then also the dough, we're starting to notice that we can create a dough that maybe we can do for wholesale because it's like a par-baked dough. And that way, if you have like a bar or something that has like a small kitchen, you know, you can literally
– Right, you can bake off flatbreads or whatever.
Yeah, and they can top it with whatever they want to. So I noticed there's that. And then also we're taking the pasta into retail too. So I'm working on that.
Okay. Well, and you're wholesaling the pasta because you like it.
Yeah, I got like
Rudyard's and Wooster's.
24
and...
restaurants right now. Yeah, oh, all the local foods. Benji's, the classic, Rainbow Lodge. I'm actually maxed out. I cannot make any more pasta than what we're making right now.
I mean, that's got to feel pretty good.
It's really awesome, man. And you know what? So that's how I kind of like stayed afloat the whole like 2 years it took to get Bravery open is I got that pasta machine and put it in my apartment. And I just started getting out there and like just started hustling it. And it caught on. And it caught on faster than I ever thought that it would be. I thought I'd have to be knocking on doors and, you know, standing in chefs' kitchens while I, you know, like get out of here, you know, no soliciting. I hate it. I can't stand it when people come and, like, try to sell me stuff at my restaurant. And I thought I was going to have to do that. And with social media, you know, I just got really lucky. People picked up on it and approached me. And we just kept on growing and growing and now I'm like, you know, like, hey, how do I develop a pasta for my menu?
Awesome.
So
you're working with people on these recipes?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, they're like, hey, what kind of ideas like do I have? I'm like, well, Kevin Nadiri, he came to me and he's like, hey, how can you, you know, it's like, can you come up with like, what flavors can you do? And I was like, well, I can do that. I'm doing this and this and this. And it was like a charred leek. It was a charred leek pasta. And so he had it on his menu for a little while, and then I went to when Benji's was doing their menu, they asked me, and I was like, well, you know, I'm doing this one for Kevin. And they're like, oh, can you do charred leek and squid ink pasta? So that's on the Benji's menu
now. Sweet, okay.
And then they have like a mint pappardelle. Like they're doing some like fun stuff over there with our pastas. Yeah, those local foods. They're
busy pasta. Restaurants. Yeah, they're not messing around. So before we'll wrap this up, but I mean, being an operator in Bravery, I mean, what's that been like for you? Cause I haven't really talked to anybody who's opened one of those restaurants yet.
I love it. I like the dynamic. I mean, being around Jess, being around the Kokoro guys, I get to work with Shepherd Ross every day.
Yeah.
Like that, he's just awesome. Like everything, like you know, it's a lot of fun. Like we're having a really good time over there. You know, the downtown dynamic is interesting because we're a little bit further down on the block as opposed to where like Finn is. So we have a totally different kind of business.
Right. I mean, you're away. You're not on the tunnel.
Yep.
And you're away from offices, so you wouldn't.
We don't really get the big lunch, but we kill it at dinner. So it's just such a different dynamic, which is great for us for being like a chef because we're, you know, we have to charge a little more for these products. So we're not stuck in that, like, you know, that, hey, you got to be in and out in 30 minutes. You can't have
30 minutes and 10 bucks.
Yeah.
And it's also sweet tea. It's just a little bit easier to park there.
Yes. A little bit easier.
I mean,
Uber.
You may have to circle.
Yeah, just Uber down there.
Uber. There's that garage. If you, you know, you can pay for that garage across the street.
Yeah, it's like $20. If it's an event, they charge like it's even, I'm not going to say that because they are doing a thing that if you go to a show, and then or if you eat with us, they have a discount and it's in the works. I think they're going to have like a little thing, and we're actually going to have it at Bravery, where if you come down there and if you eat and do a show, you can park in that garage, and I want to say it's like $10.
Yeah, I mean I know that it's like a $6 ride share from my apartment in Montrose.
Yeah.
So it's like I can save money by ride share as a, you know, and that way I can drink.
Yep.
And not have to worry about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
So yeah, a lot of benefits to not driving downtown. Well, I mean, you kind of got me to the end of my questions. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
That's just it, man.
All right. Awesome. All right. Well, before I let you get out of here, we have to do the lightning round.
Okay.
Five easy questions, five short answers.
Oh, God.
Just say the first thing that comes to mind. Ben McPherson, what is your favorite cookbook?
Oh, my God. I totally stumped me on the first one. Actually, you know what? I got the grandma, the grandma cooking thing. It's like a YouTube series. Actually, I like it a lot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I can't. The name's not popping my head.
All right. I'm into that. All right. Yeah. What's the first band you ever saw in concert?
Chicago.
What is your fast food guilty pleasure? It has to come from a restaurant with a drive-thru.
Oh, a Big Mac.
What is your, who's your favorite Houston sports figure, past or present?
JJ.
Nice. Yeah. And then I always ask people, what's your go-to pizza order? What are your preferred toppings?
Oh, mine is sausage and mushroom.
Great answer.
You know, actually, I have my guilty pleasure is Domino's pizza. It's like a savory donut.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's nothing healthy about it.
Not at all. All right, give us the social media and the website and all that for Bo Pasta.
Yes, at Bo Pasta.
B-O-H
Pasta.
All right, awesome. Ben, thanks for being here.
Like Eric, thanks for having me.
All right, you can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.